Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 25, In the Cards, teleplay by Ronald D. Moore and directed by Michael Dorn. In the Cards aired on June 9th, 1997. This was Michael Dorn's first of three times directing Deep Space Nine. He also went on to direct one episode of Enterprise.
Yeah, it's always kind of interesting to me how, like, this era of Star Trek kind of became a little bit of, like, directing school.
Yeah.
Right? And, like obviously, Frakes, and then LeVar Burton did a lot of
And Avery Brooks and have did a lot on episodes. This too.
Yeah.
And Renee.
He's done some. Yep. And then on Voyager, you had Roxanne Dawson.
And yeah, and she went. McNeil, and who, Roxanne, we were talking about this the other day, like me and my roommates. Like Roxanne, like directs a lot of things now. Like she like made a career of it, and I think.
Yeah.
I think Frakes somewhat has as well.
Yeah, I do think, though, that, like, I think Roxanne Dawson's probably, like you say, the most successful in terms of making career. Like,
yes.
Obviously, Frakes has done the Star Trek features, and I think he at least did one or two, like, other features, but, like,
it's mostly been Star Trek TV. He directs
a lot of Star Trek now.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did, I think he directed in some of the newer shows, too. I just don't remember.
Oh, for
like,
sure.
Like, Strange New Worlds, maybe.
He pretty much gets at least one episode a season of the modern.
Yeah.
Like, and he directed.
But yeah, Roxanne is like directing other franchises and shows and stuff like that.
Yeah. All right. This week on Deep Space Nine, Jake and Nog get into trouble while trying to cheer up Sisko by acquiring a mint condition 1951 Willie Mays rookie baseball card. The Dominion offers to sign a non-aggression pact with Bajor.
Initial.
Well, Elise, we'll start.
Sorry.
Sorry, what?
I was going to say all initial right. thoughts. I just want you to also know that Roxanne Dawson was married to Casey Biggs, who played Samar on Deep Space Nine. They got divorced in 1987, though.
Oh, so this is like predate Star Trek.
Yes. Yes. I think that's really funny. Sorry. Continue. I was like on a little rabbit hole situation.
This is like some Lena Headey and like Jerome Flynn or whatever on
Jerome Flynn, yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
That was an actor who plays Bronn's name, right? Yeah, because Johnny Flynn's his like younger half brother who's the folk singer.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Jerome also was in a music group. Anyways, back to Star Trek.
Family of singers.
Elise, did you or did you not remember this episode?
I did not remember this episode. I thought
you probably had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. So when I saw the name of the episode, I like saw a baseball card and I was like, oh, it's the baseball episode. And then I'm like, we start watching it. And I'm like, this is not the baseball. This is a different baseball episode than the one I was thinking, because the one I'm thinking of is in season 7.
Oh, the Take Me Out to the Holosuite.
Yes.
Death to the opposition.
But yeah, no, I did not remember this one. And you were correct. I had a really fun time with it. I really enjoyed the, like, trade this for that, like, stuff that Jake and Nog had to go through to get all the supplies. I found the nod to the Wizard of Oz to be really funny. Lions and Geigers and bears. And then, like, Jake's like, oh, my. Like, that was very funny.
And then cuts to commercial. Yeah.
I will say I miss Dax, Terry Farrell, like, having something to do in this show. Like, she's not even in this episode. And I hate that. Give my girl something to do.
Right? And it's like, it's strange to me. I wonder, like, if she had a conflict or was, like, filming something else or something. Because, like, you at least think she would have been at the dinner scene, right?
Yeah, exactly. She hasn't really had that much to do at all. Like the second half of the season that I can recall, honestly.
This episode, to me, is such, like, it being the penultimate episode of the season and knowing what's coming, and I think, like, you know, this episode is like bookends itself with, you know, the coming storm. This feels a little bit like the calm before the storm and things like that. It's just such an interesting decision to like have this kind of lighthearted episode right before a probable war sounds like it's going to break out, right?
Yes. I don't disagree with that at all. I will just say I agree with that. I find that I say don't disagree way too often. I'm like, isn't that just agreeing with somebody? Yeah, it is really like, it's a lot lighter than you normally would get at this stage of the season. But I do think there's the B plot really is like setting us up for the finale of the season more than the A plot anyway.
Yeah. And I think that's where like, and this is maybe why it kind of ends up being such a memorable episode, despite the machinations of the minions, the soulless minions of Orthodoxy. But it kind of takes the, like, we do have the classic A story, B story structure, but in a lot of other episodes, they would have been reversed, right?
Yes.
Like, you would have had the heavy, like, Dominion non-aggression pact political plot with the Lily Mays baseball card comedic relief, and then it switched, and it's fun to kind of, like, switch it up too, right? I think that's what makes it so memorable.
Yeah, I agree. I also was looking, when I was looking up the production notes on this episode, I saw that the intention of this episode was specifically to be done as a bottle episode. I know we've described this before, but in case you are not aware, a bottle episode or a bottle show is one where you kind of just use all the sets you have existing. You don't really pay to have major guests on the episode. Like, it's a way to keep the budget down for that episode. I will say, yeah, except for maybe having Louise Fletcher on, because like she's obviously a big guest star, I do think like this is very much a bottle episode. And we also, I mean, yeah, we do get a little bit of a scene from, you know, Jeffrey Combs and Chase Masterson are also in the episode, but they're not doing that much, like, because they're, as you said, like, well, Chase is in like one scene, but like they're Jeffrey and Louise, you know, because I'm on first name basis with both of them, are in the smaller plot.
Yeah, and I don't know how the contracts work and like payment, you know,
right,
and things like that. But like, I'm kind of going to assume that it's based on like days you're required for filming, and they're wouldn't have probably had to work the full week if they're in the big,
yeah,
plot. So probably would have saved a little bit of money that way. Right?
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, not that I know either, but it's probably would be like table read and then like a day or so filming, because they are, yeah, they're not in that many scenes.
No.
So I first wanted to,
I was just going to say, it's like we talked about Dorn directing this episode, and like I think Worf's only in two scenes, but like he probably was at work for almost as long as like, say, someone like Sadig, who was in like also like twos, but Dorn would have had an earlier call time to put in the makeup.
Yeah, that's true.
I hope they shot both of those in the same day.
Me too.
They shot both of those in the same day.
So for this episode, I did want to talk about the Kai Winn story, and then we'll talk about Jake and Nog, and then we can discuss kind of where the plots converge, if that works for you.
Yep, no, of course.
So Kai Winn is coming to the station. The Dominion has requested a meeting with her. She's pretty nervous about the safety of Bajor she's pretty worried about the safety of Bajor if the Dominion decides to invade. And for once, it seems like she and Sisko are actually on the same, like, of the same opinion. Like, that is at the top of both of their minds. And Sisko confirms to her, like, I will not let Bajor's safety be like lessened. Like, that is on the top of my to-do list, just to keep Bajor safe, basically. We have Weyoun, who shows up he's who Kai Winn is going to meet with. There's a little scene where Sisko is there and is very icy with Weyoun. I love when Weyoun shows up. I find him so irritating to Sisko, but I get such enjoyment out of watching Jeffrey Combs annoy Avery Brooks. Like, It makes me laugh every single time. Like, he's just so vague and aloof and just like, you just never know what's going on in his head. And it kind of, it's very Jeffrey Combs, because I feel very similarly, about his character of Shan in Enterprise. Like, he just, like, you never know what he's gonna say or do, and it's just really entertaining. Or Brent, for that matter.
I would love it. I don't know if we ever see them together in, like, a capacity quite like this, but, like, can you imagine, like, a dinner party scene with Wei Yun and Garak, and they're just being so polite to each other, but just, they're basically, like, telling
throwing each other daggers at each other, like, beneath the surface. Yes, I think that would be so entertaining.
Not to invoke Game of Thrones for the second time on this podcast, but that'd be, like, the, like, best, like, Littlefinger and Varys scenes.
That's yes, what I imagine it would oh be, my like, god.
Just needling each other.
Yes. I need to now, like, look up, it, like, scenes where they potentially meet. It turns out that the Dominion wants the Kai to, or wants Bajor to sign a non-aggression treaty with them, which feels really strongly, like, if to me feels real strong that, like, the Dominion would just take over Bajor if that was signed. And I appreciate that Sisko just tells her to stall, like, don't sign anything, like, don't, just trust me, don't sign this, put him off for a little bit.
Put him up. Wizard of Oz.
I'm aware. Yeah. I'm just teasing you. I watched that movie. I saw that in the movie theater last year, which was phenomenal. And I have, like, watched it after I saw, I rewatched it again after I watched Wicked in the theater.
I actually just rewatched it for the first time in a long time, a couple months ago. Can't remember if it was pre-Wicked or
post-Wicked. Right. It doesn't matter. It's a perfect film, in my opinion.
Well, and it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, I really should have known I was queer sooner. When I was a kid, that was, like, one of my favorite movies, and my parents...
Because you were a friend, of Garak.
Yeah, exactly. And they had it on Betamax, which is, nice. Is dating myself, but the only, like,
I am familiar.
The only room they had a Betamax player in was their bedroom. Yep. So when my little sister was having nap time because it was too scary for her with the witch, I'd sit on my parents' waterbed, also dating myself.
Wow.
And watch The Wizard of Oz. I think it's probably recorded off TV or whatever.
Yeah.
On Betamax.
I just want to say, so, like, your parents having a waterbed is just not something I had on my bingo card for your family, and I just have a lot of questions, which I will ask you off pod. I'm kidding, but, like, I did not expect that.
Yeah, I don't remember them having it, like, very long into, like, the 90s.
Right.
I don't, like, remember when they switched. I just remember, like, have vague memories as, like, a, you know, older toddler or whatever, or, like, younger kid, I guess, when I tried to sneak into their bed at night, and I hated the waterbed because I felt it was, like, impossible to do a good sneak.
Yeah, because it makes, like, smooshing noises, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
I had a friend in high school that had, it wasn't, like, the full-on waterbed, but it was, like, a bed that had, like, water tubes in it. And that sleeping over, like, having a sleepover at her house was always fun, like, in concept. And then you'd actually, like, sleep on the water tubes, and it was, like, not that comfortable. It felt like it felt like kind of an air mattress in some ways, which, like, is not the worst way to sleep, but it's not the best either.
Yeah. And it really, like, it depends on, like, the air mattress itself. Yeah, and that, like, that was, speaking of quarters and beds, like, the beds and, like, you know, we do see a bedroom scene later in this episode, but, like, the beds on Star Trek, or at least on Deep Space Nine, never look that comfortable to
me. I agree. I'm like, in a post-scarcity society, we should all be having, like, the best, like, Tempur-Pedic beds possible.
All right.
The real spendy ones.
Look about... They look about as comfortable as, like, you know, those, like, classic old school blue foam, like, sleep mats that you would take camping or whatever. Yeah. That are just not very thick. It feels no, like they'd be as comfortable
I
as
agree. That. They honestly sometimes to me look like prison beds. Like, I mean, they're probably more comfortable and clean than those, but they just look yeah. so... Like, the beds in Dune, I guess I should say. Like, the Lynch movie. Like, those, yeah. that, like, fucking... Paul has, like, a wooden pillow at some point, I think. I might be making that up, but it does not look comfortable. Did you want to talk about this note you have before we move on to Jake and Nog? The last...
Yeah, no, just that in this, the one of the scenes with Sisko and Wynn, there, Wynn calls back to the Sisko, an episode earlier this season, where Sisko, possibly under the influence of the prophets, told Bajor not to join the Federation and that Bajor must stand alone and what that does or doesn't mean. So, yeah, I guess stay tuned. We love a serialized callback, don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, it was really funny when that happened. I was like, oh, this is like our least Star Trek thing that happens in this episode, a callback to something that hasn't been talked about in a while. I mean, I know Deep Space Nine, like, pretty much from here on out, it will be pretty serialized. Like, I know we keep saying this, but, like, it just gets more and more serialized as the seasons go on. So, like, because the rest of this episode had nothing to, like, the Jake and Nog stuff is not really, it's just about cheering up Benjamin. So it just felt like, I was surprised that there was some continuity in there. So we start our episode with a dinner at Sisko's quarters. Everyone's pretty bummed. Odo had to cancel a trip to Bajor. Kira and Bashir are arguing about, like, what should be done. Worf is standing in the corner, which I guess is what happens when you are directing the episode. You just don't have you don't partake in the rest of the conversation. It's just... And it gets to a point where, oh, like, Miles has nothing to say. You know, Sisko's, like, asks if his son is walking yet. And Miles is just like, no. And then has, like, it's a dead conversation. But, yeah, it's kind of sad.
That dinner scene, though, was, like... felt so relatable. Where it's, like... Someone just, like, brings up, like, the current state of the world yep. and hanging out with your homies, and then it's just like, well, I want to fucking die now.
Yeah, I've been the person that, like, says the bad news during that kind of situation, and then you just feel like utter shit for, like, bringing everyone down. So, yeah.
And then there's that really good bit where, like, because of whatever was just said, you can see Bashir topping up Kira's glass, and then he puts the bottle down, and Nog and Jake are, like, bussing the table, and Nog goes to take the bottle, and Bashir grabs it from him and just, like, looks at him like, no.
Bashir's like, we're drinking tonight, buddies.
Yeah, exactly.
I, like, had a very similar the day, like, I say a few weeks ago because I don't fucking know, like, what time is anymore, but the day that, like, Elon Musk did the Nazi salute, I was, like, trying to be offline that day with, like, news and stuff, and then, like, all of us, I, like, literally just went straight to my, like, liquor bar and was like, oh no, we're drinking today. Like, I had a very similar reaction to Julian at that moment.
Yeah. The other relatable thing to me at the party was, like you said, Worf standing in the corner. And it's,
I'm surprised,
like,
he didn't have a dunce cap. Like,
right? Yeah, it's like he was in a timeout or something. But it's because there's no dog or cat for him to pay attention yeah. to, and he felt awkward, so he thought he'd just stare at the wall.
I think
and
it's
then
really
when the party ends and he doesn't notice.
The way that you phrased that made it seem like you were, like, projecting yourself onto Worf. Like, there's no dog or cat here for me to talk to, so I'm going to talk to no one.
Right. No, and it's like, Sisko, you've been paroled, Mr. Worf. The party's over.
That was so funny. like we're letting you go. So Jake just, like, really wants to cheer his dad up, and he and Nog are at Quark's, and they find out about an auction that Quark is hosting, and one of the pieces in the lot is a mint condition 1951 Willie Mays rookie card. So he wants to buy this for his dad. And the whole, it was really funny because I was watching it with like Tessa, Ryan, and AJ, and AJ and Tessa both were like, with what money are you buying this card? I cannot believe that he like convinced Nog to like use his like Latinum life savings for this purpose, like with the guilt trip of my dad helped you into Starfleet, like you owe him this basically. Terrible. But Nog's a good friend, so he went along with it.
I really enjoyed that whole like conversation of like Jake trying to convince Nog to use his Latinum, and then Ron Moore, who wrote the teleplay, gets to kind of skewer himself and whatever, because he also was one of the writers of First Contact, and Jake full up quotes himself, or I guess Picard, from that movie, talking to Lily about how we don't have money, we work to better ourselves, yep, and all of humanity,
which is like one of the best and lines then, in that movie. Like, I love that they talk like he explains Starfleet to her that way.
To which Nog asked Jake, so what does that actually mean?
That's really funny. We get the auction scene, and Jake and Nog are outbid. But I love that Nog's also, like, criticizing Jake. He's like, you know nothing about money. Like, let me handle this. And so they get outbid by a man, like, no one's ever seen before. And I got really worried that before they got outbid that this was going to be one of those, like, oh, no, Jake and Nog committed to spending money that they don't have. And then I realized that this is not, like, a regular TV, like, teen drama or something, and that that is not what this plot was going to be. So I was pleasantly happy. I was, like, really happy that that was not where it went. I think it's really funny and ballsy that Jake insists on going to talk to the guy that, like, got the card. Like, he's like, he bought it for X amount of money, but, like, maybe I can convince him to give it to us. Like, it makes absolutely no sense. Like, you don't have that much money. Why would he give it to you if you didn't didn't spend enough money? But apparently I'm an idiot, because this guy is like, oh, well, first, well, before we get to that, this guy thinks that they're like part of some like Minion of Orthodoxy group. This guy's like a little bit of a loony. He's kind of
just a little,
someone would call a quack. His name is Dr. Elias Geiger. And he, like, after that whole scene where he, like, accuses them of being part of this group and, like, basically is, like, ignores them, he must have done some research and finds out that Jake is Benjamin Sisko's son and Nog is the nephew of Quark. So, like, he's like, okay, these people are not part of, like, some grand, like, conspiracy theory. They're just, like, two kids that live on the station, basically. I mean, obviously, Nog, like, works there as well. And I think that this whole concept of, like, being willing to trade the baseball card for supplies for his cellular regeneration and entertainment chamber, which is a mouthful, aka, like, an immortal machine, is hysterical. Like, and these kids are just like, I don't care about your bananas plan. We just want this baseball card, so let's go for it.
Yep, let's do it.
You had found out some interesting things about what was supposed to maybe happen in this episode before they landed on this.
Yeah, in the original version, I think it was, Memory Alpha had it as, like, Ira's idea. Geiger was his, like, mad scientistness was going to be trying to bring his dead wife back to life, and all he had of her was, like, an ear. And originally didn't think it worked, because then it made him too sympathetic, right? It's like, well, of course we want this guy to be able to bring his dead wife back.
Yeah. I think that having this, like, immortal machine just, like, makes him seem less serious, which is kind of what the episode wanted.
Yeah, so it was Renee Echevarria who suggested the idea of immortality, and then Moore was like, wait, I got it. Cellular boredom.
It's really funny. The list of items he needs is also really ridiculous. I'm going to list them just because I think they're very funny and like techno babble, and I don't know what any of this shit means. So I'm sharing this for comedic effect. Basically, it turns out that this guy needs a bunch of different supplies, and Jake and Nog apparently know where to get each of these supplies, and they have to do like a trade with different random people like on the station. So this guy wants a neodymium power cell, which O'Brien can give them, but they're like, O'Brien's like doing work, and they're like, we'll recalibrate the EPS regulators for you if you give us this. And then next, they need 5 liters of anaerobic metabolites suspended in a hydrosaline solution. It's like so hard. I can't imagine having to have learned these lines from Bashir, and like they're offering to do work for him, but Bashir is like, no, I've been trying to do this research for like 9 months now, and I finally have a free moment, so I am so happy doing my research, but you can get back my teddy bear Kukulaka from Lita, who did not return him after we broke up. And like, because they're on a time crunch to get the baseball card, I love that Nog has to like sneak into Lita's bedroom while she's sleeping rather than like grabbing it the next day when she's at work. It was really, really funny to watch this one scene where like Lita's just like sleeping and Nog takes the, he's like basically spying on his like stepmom. It's really funny. Yeah. Nog also has to filter out the subharmonic distortions of Worf's Klingon opera. And Jake helps Kira with an upcoming speech to the Bajoran Agricultural Ministry for, like, another one of the items. Like, it's just very specific things. And I think it is amusing. I'm sad that they didn't have to, like, trade anything with Odo, because then that would have been, like, everyone at that meeting, that at the beginning of the episode, who was grumpy, like, had, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just so much extra work because Jake is, like... knows how much of a gossip everyone on the station is and doesn't want to get tipped off that he's trying to get the card for his
dad. That was so funny. He knows the ins and outs of like who tells who. Maybe that's why Dax wasn't on this episode, because she's the most gossipy of all. But like the fact that Jake knows this person will tell this person who will tell that person who will tell my dad, so like we need to like not tell anyone anything. It was just really funny because Nog was like, if we tell Bashir, like, what we need this solution for, he'll just give it to us. And, like, Bashir's pretty much the most gossipy of the people that are, like, in this episode.
Yeah. What's a Kukulaka?
Kukulaka is the name of the teddy bear.
No, I know. But, like, Nog's like, what's a Kukulaka?
I know. I love it. So Weyoun is in the quarters above Geiger and like starts to hear sounds coming from his Geiger's quarters. So like Weyoun starts to get like sus of like what's going on downstairs. But when Nog and Jake go back to Geiger to give him all the supplies, like he's gone. There's nothing in the quarters. And Odo claims that there never was anyone in those quarters, but also this bothers me because Odo treats them like they're children making something up. Like, I feel like in this show, Odo should know Jake and Nog better by now. Like, why would they have made this up? This is the only part of the episode that doesn't make sense to me, that Odo's, like, dismissive of what they're saying.
Yeah, but in fairness, he is a cop. And
no, I know. It's just, know. Like, I felt like we were past this, that's all.
Yeah, it's like, I get what you mean, where it's like, it felt like they were like, he was dealing with like season one or two Jake and Nog, right? Not adult Jake.
Exactly. Nog. Like, Nog is in Starfleet and Jake, like, hasn't acted like a child for a bit, I think. Since he and Nog had that disagreement, like, about, and he wouldn't clean up the apartment. Like, since then, Jake's been on best behavior. This is kind of where the plots converge. Because Jake thinks that Kai Winn had Geiger kidnapped because of one of the other auction items. There was, like, a Bajoran Mandela in the same lot. And Wayun's becoming suspicious because Jake and Nog are, like, meeting with all the senior officers. I accidentally got ahead of myself. Wei-Yun and Kai-Win meet again, but she tells him, like, I can't really answer your request without talking to the first minister. So that's kind of, that's where the A plot, the B plot kind of ends, in my opinion. Like, she's put him off for now. And Wei-Yun becomes part of the A plot. Sisko is really angry that they accused Kai-Win of kidnapping. And Jake lies to his dad about this and says that they were drunk because he didn't want to spoil the whole baseball card thing. And I feel so bad for Nog in this moment because Jake is, like, dealing with his dad, but Nog is dealing with a superior officer. And Jake has, like, a privilege here that he does not realize. Like, this lie could fuck up Nog's career for all Jake knows.
Yeah.
I just didn't like it at all.
Maybe Odo has a point, though. Maybe that's, they aren't as mature.
I was about to say that, actually. Yeah, so they were, like, kind of punished and was like, go to your quarters. But on the way there, they're transported to Wei-Yun's room to talk, to be questioned about Dr. Geiger. And I really did find it funny that Jake just tells Wei-Yun the truth. No, we were just trying to get the baseball card for my dad. And Wei-Yun, like, doesn't believe that. This is where I was accidentally getting ahead of myself earlier. Wei-Yun doesn't believe them. He's like, you've been meeting with all the senior officers. You met with Kai-Win right after I met her. And, like, all these things. And then, we, you know, we find out that Wei-Yun is who kidnapped Geiger. And then... This is my favorite part. Jake starts telling this, like, nonsensical story about how they're actually working for Starfleet Intelligence, searching for a man from the future named Willie Mays, and the baseball card is their only lead. And Wei-Yun's like, okay, you're full of shit. The first story must have been real. The episode doesn't really... My one other complaint about the episode is it kind of ends, like, too neatly. Like, Wei-Yun is so excited about Geiger's program that he just starts talking to him about that, but also lets Jake and Nog go with the baseball card. And it just feels like everyone got what they want. I mean, except for Geiger. But maybe Geiger did just want someone to listen to his nonsense machine schematics.
Yeah.
Like, we never hear from Geiger again. But hopefully Wei-Yun didn't kill him. Like, we don't know.
Yeah, it would have been funny if down the road we're, like, in Wei-Yun's office on Cardassia and you just see the machine in the background. But
we see Wei-Yun, we see Geiger, like, frozen in carbonite on his wall.
Yeah.
Exactly. This episode did get wrapped up with a bow a little bit. All the favors that Jake and Nod did for everyone kind of cheered everyone up. And they were able to give Sisko the baseball card without spending any latinum, so... Nog still has his fortune.
All under his bed. The episode I did feel, though, like, in the ending, like, voiceover narration that Sisko does, where he's like, oh my god, everyone's, like, so much happier now, even though it goes out of its way to say, like, bad shit's still coming.
Yeah.
Like, this is a temporary reprieve, like, come back next week and it won't be all happy-go-lucky, but... I just felt it kind of went out of its way to, like, put that all in context, right? But
yeah, I agree. But it was a really fun back and forth. And, like, the way that they had to, like, get this to get that was really similar to the episode with the self-sealing stem bolts, like, in, like, season one. Where yeah. They're, like, trying to sell some shit or whatever.
Yeah. And they end up with land and Nog thinks it's worthless and then... They get a bunch of money from the land.
Yep. So, yep.
The Nojeg Consortium, which is actually probably my candidate for the most Star Trek thing, because there's another episode that comes up later. I think it's in season 7, maybe, where Nog gets to do a trade 'em up sort of thing too. Again. So I think they go back to that well. I think a total of 3 times, but
and I do think the self-sealing stem bolts gets mentioned a bunch of times too. Just in the series in general. I don't remember the episode that you're just talking about, but we'll see when we get there.
Now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water first being mentioned in the context of Star Trek by Dr. McCoy in Star Trek Through the Search for Spock. Also a possible reference to Alta from Altair 4 from the MGM film Forbidden Planet. Elise Who are you thirsting for this week?
I had in the notes that I was thirsting for no one, but I wouldn't have minded, like, spooning Lita a little bit while she was sleeping.
You want, in that moment, you wanted to be Cuculaca.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, I don't think it was a particularly thirsty episode for me either, but, you know, it is what it is. Did you have a candidate for most Star Trek thing?
Just like, what happened to Geiger? Is he okay? We never hear from him again. But he's probably just a harmless quack, and that's fine.
We're all fine here now. How are you? Boring conversation anyway. Luke, we're gonna have company.
I know you're kidding. I'm kidding, but like, I hope you're not saying our conversation is boring.
No. I'm just teasing. One of those things where once I start,
you have to say the whole quote. I understand. Yeah, I got you. Actually, it was, I usually quote that pretty often, and it's been a minute, so it was needed.
Yeah, cool. Was there anything else you wanted to say about In the Cards, Elise?
No, I'm good.
Awesome. Well, until next time, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find links to my True Blood podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z. You can find links to my James Bond podcast, Pay Attention 007, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Pay Attention 007 Pod, and and at moviejawn.com. That's J-A-W-N.
Awesome. You can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Maddie Hugh. You can find us together at Blue Sky and Instagram at podrace. And you can also email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer, end program.
Bye.